You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news with a local perspective. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada. Welcome to CICK News for Thursday, January 18th. Tonight in Smithers, Dr. Kira Hoffman is presenting her research on reconstructing historic fire activity in BC's sub-boreal forests. Today, I spoke with Dr. Hoffman about fire control in our new and warming climate, and she shared the best and some of the oldest tools which she thinks can be employed today to fight fire with fire. Dr. Hoffman is presenting her research tonight at the Old Church in Smithers at 7:30 p.m., presented by the BV Naturalists and BV Research Center.
My name is Kira Hoffman. I'm a postdoctoral researcher at the University of British Columbia and Bulkley Valley Research Center.
Okay, so we're here to talk about controlled fire in BC's sub-boreal forest. Can you tell me historically how fire was used to manage forest landscapes?
So historically, fire has been a component of these landscapes since they became the forest that we see today. Sub-boreal spruce and lodgepole pine are fire-requiring species. And so fire has always been and will always be a component of this landscape. Before policies of fire suppression and fire exclusion came into effect in about the 1920s, early 1930s in this area, fire was an intentional management tool used by Indigenous peoples for thousands of years.
How does new technology marry with historical knowledge about the advancements of fire safety?
Well, there's a popular saying, old tools, new ways. I think there's a great way to combine much of the technical and place-based expertise that exists within communities today, and especially within First Nations communities in the Northwest, to kind of blend with Western science and remembering that there's a very technical and scientific Indigenous knowledge that exists about fire, and making sure that we're relying on both of those ways of knowing in order to better coexist with fire, better manage fire into the future. So, you know, we use a lot of technology, we use weather stations, we use fire behavior predictions here, but in many ways, you could go out on the landscape, touch the soil, you could understand where, you know, how soon deciduous trees are going to be coming into leaf. And this would give you a really good idea about how you could be using fire at that time.
Where did you gather the information and who did you work with for your PhD to learn about more of the traditional and Indigenous ways of using fire to control forests?
So it's important to note that, you know, fire is used to fight fire, so it can be used to reduce the risk of wildfire, but it's also used for many other reasons. So to manage for multiple values, so food, ceremony, culture, cultural revival, intergenerational knowledge exchange. And for me, I had been a firefighter with BC Wildfire Service for quite a few years before starting my PhD. And in my kind of the way that I understood things is that there just wasn't fire in coastal temperate rainforests. There wasn't fire in some of these really wet landscapes, because there's no way that they'd be able to burn except for under very extreme drought. But when I started doing my collaborative research on the Central Coast with the Heiltsik, Wikanow, and Niuwak nations, it became very clear that there was millennia of knowledge related to burning specifically in these very wet hypermaritime forests. These are some of the wettest forests in North America. And that kind of knowledge is really, really important moving forward, because as these places start becoming warmer, drier, and becoming more susceptible to climate change impacts, we are going to see more fire in those landscapes. Some people never stopped burning. You know, some of those, that knowledge has been passed on through generations. And even though it was banned and illegal to be burning, some people kept that practice alive. And when we're going to be returning fire to the landscape, we're relying on our ability to support Indigenous-led fire stewardship. So that means, you know, making sure that people have the tools they need to engage more in controlled burning, to make sure that the permits are in place for this to happen. And so supporting that whenever possible.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the tools?
I think it's important to understand why we're using fire. So one of it, again, one of the reasons is to reduce wildfire risk. And that is a tool that's always been used. So clearing dead and dry brush away from homes. It's also a tool for food security or food sovereignty. So making sure that there's enough green grass in the spring to support fodder for game that you would then be hunting. And then another major reason for burning is to increase the productivity of berry producing shrubs such as huckleberry, which is a really important berry in the diet of many Indigenous peoples. And so there's a lot of different tools for managing fire across the landscape, but the ideal state of forest is to have many different structures and ages and types of forest on the landscape, like a big patch mosaic, where there's always food available. There's always places that are in burning rotation. And this is a great way to engage in proactive management today, because if you have those patches of different forest types, and if you're routinely burning, then when a wildfire does happen, it meets those boundaries of past fires. It meets forests that are in different ages, and it actually slows it down. So right now we have a lot of our forests that are kind of the same age. So this is an artifact of fire suppression. A lot of these forests are around 100 years old now, and they are prone for burning. So they have got a lot of dead, dry fuel in them. They've undergone disturbances like mountain pine beetle. And when a fire does happen, it's got this continuous fuel or vegetation to keep burning. So when we keep landscapes in that more patch mosaic, it makes them more resilient to wildfire.
Mm-hmm. Kira, I want to ask a question. I'm not sure if you can answer this, but in part of the management of forests, are you also including creating and burning slash piles as well? Is that part of this?
Ideally, when there's abundant fuel, and so like if you're doing a risk reduction activity like thinning and you have fuel, or you're doing logging, you have excess fuel, ideally those would be going to communities to support firewood. So allowing people to use that fuel to burn in their wood stoves would be the best case scenario. Secondly, that waste would be then going to places like mills where they could use it. Burning those piles is kind of the last thing that we'd want to see, because we just don't want to see that fuel being wasted when it could be used in a bioeconomy or for people to heat their homes.
Okay. Now, you did mention something that I was hoping that you could speak to a little bit, which was about last year's berry season. Can you just talk a little bit about what our fire season here in the Bulkley Valley, what it was like last year and what effects it had?
Sure. So we had a pretty extreme drought last year in the Bulkley Valley. There were some huckleberries available on north facing slopes, and that's where we saw some places that were protected, that had more moisture, not as much sun. We did see a lot of berries, and this is not just huckleberries, but many of our berries having solar damage. So too much sun, which actually kind of burns the plants. And then we had warm and dry conditions so early that it made the plants come out sooner. So they leafed out sooner, and then it was too dry for them to be able to put on fruit. This does happen. So there is good years for berries and kind of bad years for berries, and that rotates. But to have such a large area impacted where there just wasn't the kind of fruit that we normally see was worrying.
Could you let people know about the talk that you're giving tonight at the Old Church?
Sure. So tonight I'm going to be sharing a little bit more of my recent research in subboreal forests. And this is collaborative research that I've undertaken with the Chisalata Carrier Nation. as well as the University of British Columbia and the Bulkley Valley Research Center. And it's a presentation that has been requested by the BV Naturalists. And so I'll be sharing a little bit about kind of how we got to the current wildfire problem we're facing, and some of the solutions that might match the scale of the problem, including proactive management and dynamic management of fire in static landscapes. So I'll be specifically focusing on the forest type around this region and talking about how there's little things that each of us can do to prepare for coming wildfire seasons.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
You're welcome. Take care.
Dr. Kira Hoffman is presenting her research tonight at the Old Church in Smithers at 7:30 p.m., presented by the BV Naturalists and BV Research Center. If you can attend, it's at the Old Church at 7:30. Or you can view it on Zoom. Just email info@bvcenter.ca for the link. And now here's an update from Smithers Community Services Director Will George. Will is on the news today to talk about the current economic development survey, which is circulating in Smithers now. If you are a resident of Smithers, Will employs you to find the survey online at the Town of Smithers website, or you can find it on frequencynews.ca. Just search for CICK News.
My name is Will George, Director of Community Services with the Town of Smithers. And yeah, definitely happy to share with your listeners today that we have the Smithers Economic Development Plan Survey, which is now live. We're encouraging community members to participate in this survey. This is to establish an economic development plan for the town of Smithers to support job creation, investment, workforce, and resident attraction. And the survey is very important to understand why people not only move to Smithers, but also stay in the community and the region. We're looking at business growth and entrepreneurship for some of the questions that are included in this survey that is put out to the public. The town of Smithers have hired Reinick Consulting to support this project. And as listeners might recall, this is a project that is fully funded through a grant that the town of Smithers received previously. We've put this survey out from January 5th until February 2nd. And we're hoping that interested individuals will participate in the survey. We have a draw to enter to win local Smithers gift cards for all of the survey participants there. The plan, the economic development plan, is scheduled to be completed in July 2024, and we have a variety of survey questions that will support the economic development plan creation, such as what is needed to attract new people and workforce to the community, what individual items are needed to improve Smithers to make it more business friendly, as well as what are the top economic priorities that should occur to support the future local economy. The plan is set to set the is scheduled to set the direction for the local economy over the next 5 years. And the survey link is available on the Town of Smithers website, right on the homepage. And the survey is set to close on February 2nd. We thank everyone for participating in the survey, and we look forward to receiving high engagement on this outreach. If you have any questions, feel free to contact Town Hall or email ecdev@smithers.ca.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.